to establish ourselves, to find ourselves. Many of you, because you have not taken serious your duty to study the Quran, many of you still yearn to find yourself. I don't yearn to find myself. That's been over for me better than 10 years ago. That's a burden on people when they yearn to find themselves. It's a great burden. It keeps you out of the race. Yes. I said it and I say it here. Racism was invented to keep ignorant people out of the race. And God again says to us in the Holy Book, قُلْ لَا يَسْتَوِي الْخَبِيثُ وَالطَّيِّبُ. God says to Muhammad the Prophet, say to them, there's no comparison between the corruptible and the good. No comparison between the corruptible and the good. And they should know each other upon sight. Yes. The corruptible, they know the good upon sight. And the good should know the corruptible upon sight. They just don't look alike. Their vibes are not alike. And look now what God says. That is too much for many of us to grasp. وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَكَ كَثْرَةُ الْخَبِيثِ. Though you are amazed upon observing the prophets, some corruption, the huge prophets from corruption. Now, isn't that what takes people down the road of corruption? They think that the life of corruption is more profitable. See, I don't want to be good and broke. I don't want to be holy and poor. But God says, no, that it is you who is poor, and God is rich. Then God says, فَتَّقُوا اللَّهَ يَعُولِ الْأَلْبَابِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. God says, therefore, fear God. Why God says, after talking about the great piling up, the amassing of wealth upon principles of corruption, will astonish us, will amaze you, will take your senses away. That's what it means. Will take your senses away. And you'll be just attracted to take the road of corruption because there's so much material advantage, etc., in it for you, you think. After bringing that to our minds, God says, therefore, fear God. Because God is the power. God is the power that is greater than his creation. So if the created things tempt you and threaten your dignified posture and discipline, don't turn to your own mind. You are nothing but created thing too. Turn to Allah. And God is appealing not to the common masses or the common populace. No. God says, فَتَّقُوا اللَّهَ يا أولي الألباب لعلكم تفلحون. Therefore fear God, O men of logic, that you may be successful. Now, isn't it wonderful that the man that was trusted to give this message to mankind, or to humanity at large, himself was uneducated? He didn't have any degrees, no schooling. He was not taught the sciences and the philosophies, etc., etc. He was one of the common unlearned people. And here he is speaking now with God's word, and he's addressing men, no logic, the intellectual. He says, heed this, O men of logic. Praise be to Allah. What is meant by the Islamic scholar's expression that this religion, quote, is a comprehensive religion? And the scholars, they will bring this to the attention of those that they are addressing, that this religion we call Islam, properly in the Quran, Al-Islam, is a comprehensive religion. The dictionary tells us that comprehensive means inclusive, having extensive mental range or grasp. That's what the dictionary tells us about this word, comprehensive. So what do the scholars mean now when they say that this religion is a comprehensive religion? They mean exactly that. That it is a religion that is inclusive. As Allah says in the book, through a conversation, a kind of dialogue, a narration of a dialogue between Muslims and a non-Muslim. And they wonder, they say, what kind of revelation is this? Referring to our holy book. It leaves no issue unattended, whether small or big. Inclusive. Not taking up just one area of man's problem, every area of man's problem. Not addressing one issue or one type of problem in the human life or in the life of society, but all of them that ever was an issue for man and society. That's this holy book. And nevertheless, it's a small book, 114 chapters, 30 divisions, small book that can be read by the ordinary reader within 30 days without taking off of work. So for what it has to offer, it is very small. And the Bible, the whole book says, that one took up a little book and opened it and broke the seven seals. And the very first chapter of this book containing 114 chapters is titled The Opening. And of that particular chapter, God says in the book, it is the seventh oft repeated verses. The seven oft repeated verses. And from the very word that is called Al-Fatiha, we get Miftah, which means key. So you can open seals when you have a key. Praise be to Allah. What I'm trying to tell you now in this particular part of this address, don't underestimate what we are. Just because you're in the dark, don't think we're in the dark. See, a person that's born blind has to be told that some people can see. And what does God say of this holy book? Referring to its inclusiveness, its comprehensive nature. God says of the holy book, Fihi kutubun kayyima, fihi kutubun kayyima. In it are all the upstanding books. In it, contained in it, are all the established upright books. Hey, that's impossible. How in the world can you get all the established upright books in the history of civilization, in the history of man, into this one book that you say ordinary reader can read in 1 month without taking off of work? God can do it, man. God did it. Put it all in one book. There are some scholars that God has blessed with insight to see the wonders of the language of the Quran. He has blessed them with great insight. They have taken one verse and written volumes on it. But not books to be passed over, to be ignored by the wise and taken up by the fools. I'm talking about volumes that entertain the intellectuals. There are people who have been conditioned by a past life of heightened expectations. And repeated disappointment. No people on this earth have suffered such condition or such experience more than the black man or black people in America, the African American. Don't you know disappointment started for us when the slave trader came to our mother's land? All of them didn't come with guns and gunpowder, blasting and shooting and raiding villages. All of them didn't come that way. Some of us were captured that way. Many of us were sold by our own people in Africa to the white slave traders. And many of those who sold their people into slavery was trying to get rid of a problem that they had in their own people. Now, you know that many of the Americans who came here first came from prison house dungeons. Many were chronically ill. Many were so savage that they had to be locked up as though they were slaves too, and then only released when they found a territory that nobody lived in. They just let them out in the open wilderness. Say, okay, you're free. Go for yourself in the new land. I'm talking about white folks. Many white folks were brought from Europe like that. And we were made to believe that we were living over there in Africa in heaven. Kings and queens, prince and princess. Just relaxing in our glory and luxury and good life. And the white man came over there, a savage, and captured us by force and brought us over here to this new land. Many of us believe that. We used to believe that. I was taught that. But I know better now, because I've been working on the descendants of those people for now about 25 or 30 years. And I know that there's something wrong with them. It's not all the white man's fault. Many of us, we're in marvelous shape. But too many of us in a hellish condition. We're tormented by our own thoughts, feelings, big ideas. Torment us. And won't let us come to peace with ourselves or anybody else. And as I said, I've been working with such people now for about 25 or 30 years as a religious leader, trying to show them that the answer is with God. We just can't solve our own problems without His help. And many of them look at me and wish I would die. I can understand the rich that have robbed the poor looking at me and wishing I would die. I can understand those who have established scientific support for racism, for the division of the human family, looking at me and wishing I would die. But I can't understand how a poor, no count, no name black man or black woman can look at me and wish I would die. I can't understand it. So I just have to accept that all of us didn't come directly from heaven. Many of us came directly from hell when the white man got us. And that hellish condition, that hellish sensitivity, that hellish spirit in us is still in us. And if we don't have an encounter with righteousness great enough to suck the hell out of us, we will remain in hell for I don't know how long. Ain't no way of predicting when these people will turn around and be straight. Because they have no intent. They have no intent to be straight. They think that the only way to be is to be crooked. I'm talking about black. I'm not talking about white now. I'm talking about black. So whether they say they believe in a God or not, they believe in a God. And Satan is their God. Say, oh, is this what I come to hear? This is what I came to tell you. God again says to us in the Holy Book, God is extending the hand of mercy, love, and guidance to His pitiful creature who gets big-headed in just a few years after coming from nothing and nowhere. He gets big-headed overnight. His brothers and sisters who see his faults can't even show them to him. He's too big-headed. So God, his creator and his Lord, sends the revelation, his own word, to these big-headed, big-chested, arrogant boasters, set in their stupid ways, thinking they are the learned and the wise of the earth. God sent his messenger without any credits that they recognize. No diploma, no degree, no sheepskin, nothing. Only divine inspiration and the message put into his heart and mouth by God. And God reach out to these arrogant people set in their crooked ways And in a wonderful way that we can only call divine, he brings their problems to their attention. God says, and whatever you gain from Reba, Reba is inflated interest. Usury. Tying people to you financially by enticing them to take on a debt that you know is too much for them. So either the property will come back to you, or their property will come to you, or they'll be tied up for a lifetime trying to pay their debt to you. Now, we know that this is a particular kind of evil in the business world, in the business life of man, that God is addressing. But in nature, in its nature, we find many such evils by other names. You don't have to go out and take a loan or yourself lend money at very high rates to be guilty of this. If your philosophy in business is to multiply returns to you without any thought as to whether those returns are justified or not, then you're guilty. It's the unprincipled and the principled, the ones without scruples and the ones with scruples, that are being singled out here. Those who will follow the way of corruption to get rich quick or to dominate others. And those that will follow the honorable road, whether it means a good time for them or comfort for them or not, they suffer and wait for God. Yeah, that's the difference. So God says those who go after this interest multiplied over and over again, seeking to possess the wealth of the people, they will have no credit before God. But what you gain from zakat, desiring the face of God, tureedun an wajha Allah, then they are the ones who will have multiplied gains. So God is saying that those who seek it by crooked means to exploit situations and take advantage, to get the property, to have a dominance, a material dominance over the life of the people, they will not have any credit before God. You say, oh, well, what? I don't care if I don't get no credit before God. And with the words of the ignorant, you may say, for after all, That whole idea about judgment is nothing but fantasy to me. There's nothing but this life. When I'm dead, I'm gone. That's it. You may say that. But God says you will have no credit with God. The believers will not always be at the mercy of the disbelievers. God tests the believers. And he says to the believers, do you think that you are going to be accepted on merely saying you believe in God when others before you were tested? So God will test the believers. But the test is not going to be forever. Believers are not always going to be at the mercy of disbelievers. One day believers will be formidable, strong, established, ready to deal with situations. The believers. And then you will be there and they will look at you who use your wit to multiply profit to yourself at the expense of the people. They will look at you and you won't have any credit before Allah. Haven't we seen that judgment day come in the life of physical man? Yes, it's happening all the time. This is a warning for physical man. Don't think that you're going to be left around to exploit the weak and take advantage. One day the people of God are going to be in a good situation. And they're going to look at you and judge you, and you won't have any credit before God. And that's their only... God is their only law. Their only God. Their only master. So if you don't have credit before God, you won't have any credit at all. Not when believers get their footing. Yes. Warning to the liars and the crooks, the exploiters of the weak, those who want to get over quick and think that this life is all to it. When they're gone, and nobody can wake them up from the grave and make them come and answer for their doings when they were living. Now, we have often heard the expression, that is the people of religion, to seek the face of God. And God says to the Muslims, pointing out their unity to them and allowing them their differences or their separate callings. He says to every people, or for every people, there is the Qibla, or direction toward which they are being turned, an interest that draw them, pull them on and on and on endlessly, an overriding interest. God says to us then, he says, now therefore turn your face toward the Qibla in Mecca. What is that Qibla? The convener of the council, he had mentioned it. It is the house, the bayt. God calls it Awwalul Bayt, the first house, raised up or established for all people.
not for one people, for all people. There is an orientation, a direction, an overriding discipline for directing our whole life and all of our energies, etc., etc. It is called the Qibla of the Muslim. And God says of that Qibla in the life of the Muslim that it is the first house erected for the benefit of all people, not just one race. And then God says to us, wherever you are, wherever you may be, turn your face toward that Qibla. And wherever you may be placed or scattered, God will bring you all together. That will preserve our unity. We've been trying to unite on black, trying to unite on money. We've been trying to unite on hate. We try to unite on everything that we think may hold us together. God knows, we don't know. Unite on what God has established. God promises that wherever you are, be in Africa, in Asia, scattered about, north side, west side, you don't have to be living right side by side with each other. God says he will bring you all together. So God is saying, you want something to provide a solidarity for you, an opportunity for solidarity, an opportunity for unity that won't be broken. You can't manage it. God says, if you do what I point out to you, wherever you are, you will be united. Now you might say, well, look, you Muslims have that Qibla. You have that central orientation in your life. How come you Muslims are so divided? It is simply because we have lost the message in the Quran. We've lost the message in the symbol. We've lost the message in the house. We've lost the message in the Qibla. We have something that we don't know shit about. That's why the Muslims don't have unity. So, oh, he said S-H-I-T. Did you hear him? Well, just take the S off and you got hit. And that's all I was trying to do, is hit you to get your attention. And I think if I use a little dung to do it, I won't be blamed forever. I will be forgiven one day. I don't think I'm going to be burning in hell for saying that. But you're going to burn in hell for turning against the way of God. So God says that he guarantees our solidarity. He guarantees our unity. If we hold to our Qibla, if we hold to that orientation, to hold to that orientation is to hold to the belief that God favored not a race, but all people. That God provided a haven, a protection, a way of keeping people and advancing their life and guiding them to the proper destiny. God provided it. Not for a race, but for all people. To accept that Qibla is to believe that the house of God does not belong to anybody, more so than it belongs to any other person, belongs to all of us equally. To hold to that Qibla is not to be racist. To hold to that Qibla is to be universal man, not racist. To hold to that Qibla is not to be biased or prejudiced against black man or white man or any other man, but to be fair and just, equal in your treatment of all of them. To hold to that Qibla is not to take advantage of one of your fellow men because he's ignorant and misinformed, but to give him, extend to him the same helping hand that you extend to your member of your own race. Present-day Muslim world, and for the last thousand years almost, it has not honored that. And that's why the Muslims are so divided all over this planet. Yes, how come they are inferior and beneath Western power and are dependent upon Western power? It is because they haven't honored the Qibla that God established for all men and left it in the protective custody of Muslim man. Huh? So that the Muslim man would protect it as a sign for all men. They have not protected God's sign for all men. But they have allowed themselves to be drunken by racism, nationalism. When it was our Prophet Muhammad, the same that placed the stone and brought the building back to its proper shape, the same Muhammad said in his farewell speech, there is no superiority of a white over black, and no superiority of a black over a white, no superiority of an Arab over a non-Arab, no superiority of a non-Arab over an Arab. He, with that speech and those words, ended for Muslims for all time. Fanatical nationalism, national superiority, and also racism and racial superiority. He ended it for Muslims. The issue is settled forever. And God says what? He says that he has made you tribes and families that you may become knowledgeable in an exchange with each other. Ta'arafu mean that you may have contact with each other and gain from experience with each other and become knowledgeable. God made us different and scattered us about over the land that we may have different experiences and then come back again and unite together after being separated and bring all of those different experiences together in one place to benefit every member of the family. How have the West set themselves into power? Hasn't it been by having encounters with other people? And extracting from those civilizations, extracting from their histories and their culture and their advances, and taking from it and bringing it back home for himself? Isn't that how he gained mastery and superiority? Certainly that's how he gained it. Look how they went into China. They didn't know nothing about China. They went into China. Marco Polo went there and brought back the news of gunpowder, called it black powder, in its power and its use. Brought back the news of spices and fabrics, etc. And look how their civilization was boosted forward and up because of the information they gained from their encounter, exchange with the Chinese people in that far distant land. And what did Muhammad say to us, peace be upon him? Seek knowledge, though it be in the far country of China. Huh? Yes. Had Marco Polo made his trip? Marco Polo hadn't made his trip, had he? The words I quote are 1,400 plus years old. Marco Polo, had he made his trip? I don't think so. So maybe he read and took advice and went there, huh? Praise be to Allah. God says he has not made us tribes and families that we may despise each other or stand above each other, but for the purpose of increasing our knowledge from an exchange with each other. Praise be to Allah. It's wonderful. Then God says, and the best of you, if you want to brag who is more excellent, if you want to know where is your superiority, well, okay, God says, I'll tell you where your superiority is, man. The most excellent of you is the one who is most obedient to God. Yes. He says, Akramakum Atakakum. The most noble of you is the one who is most obedient to God. Akramakum, Akramakum, Akramakum. Isn't that what man wants? He wants to be noble. You look up that word in the Arabic dictionary, it says it means noble, honorable, dignified. Isn't that what make us... Hey, I'm more dignified than he is. I'm of more superior essence. My genes are superior to his. He's inferior by nature to me. Huh? Akrama. He's noble. He's dignified. His image is just way up in his eyes. So God tells us, he says, look, he says, your origin is in Adam. You want to know where you descended from, or ascended, whatever you call it. You want to know where you came from? You're trying to find your past excellence? You want to retrace history until you find what you were? You believe you descended from a God form? God answers the question for Muslims. He says, and your origin is in Adam. And Adam was made from dust. So God sells it for us. God sells it for us. I'm not yearning to find myself. I told you, that's been sold for me a long time ago. I was looking for Khufu Jubu somewhere out there in the far regions of the galaxies. My noble father. Say, hey, I know I'm not just black and dependent, black and ill-equipped for a test on this earth. I know I must have some great history behind me. I'm looking for that great man in my past so I will know that I'm his descendant and feel good about myself when the white man say I'm inferior. I had that yearning for a long time, but all of it was settled for me. When God says, and you all descended from Adam, and Adam was made from dust. You don't need any great past to make you noble and excellent. All you need is a great spirit and a great opportunity. For every man's origin is in Adam, and the origin of Adam is in dust, and dust is nothing. So God took nothing and made something. So I don't mind being nothing as long as I have a way to be helped by God, because he takes nothing and makes it something. You know, the scientist, the wise, the genius, all they are obsessed with their own ego. Its origin. Oh, it must have a connection somewhere behind me in divine. I must have somewhere back there been God. And one of the wise from Hollywood or from the literary society wrote a book, and it was made into a movie. And this guy in this movie, that's just what he was doing. He went and invented all kind of gadgets, shock-producing apparatus and everything. A water tank to put himself in. And he put himself in a water tank and charged the water with all kind of charges. And it sent his mind back. He devised a way to send his mind back in the past. And the farther he went back, the more hideous his life was in his eyes. He finally broke a loose, and I know he never wanted to go back again. Thank God I ain't in that situation anymore. Thank God we ain't in that situation anymore. The believers in the Quran and in the Sunnah of the Prophet who accept Imam Wahid Muhammad, though they be not educated in the Quran and in the Sunnah, they are not in that situation anymore. They don't yearn to find themselves. They yearn to improve upon themselves, to advance themselves. You got to go out and buy the French look. Or who lives in Chicago and by the Sahara Desert look. He's still yearning to find himself. Thank God we don't have that problem anymore. So God says, seek the face of God. Do good. Work for profit. And spend, seeking the face of God. Don't just do it, but do it seeking the face of God. And if you do it seeking the face of God, you will have a great reward to your credit in the end. Now there's the term deferred reward. That's what God invites us to. Accept the principle of deferred reward. God said, well, I promise you heaven. The fool will say, when? And they ask, when will that be? And God replies, maybe sooner than you think. The fool says, when? You know, he forgets that here is an offer coming from the top. If any offer can be trusted, it should be the offer coming from the top. Because sometimes those between the top and the bottom, they be just be showing off. They're trying to make you think that they have decision-making power. And you follow them and later find out that it didn't even come from the top. It wasn't even approved and you left out in the cold. But here is the order, the promise coming from the top. And the promise says, if you just accept my way, I will